The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
After a footy marathon that stretched across almost an entire fortnight, we can finally take a breath in the AFL industry. But some teams will be contemplating where they currently sit in the grand scheme of things in the AFL. Most notably St Kilda, and we'll be talking with Western Bulldogs great Brad Johnson about the Saints' issues and where to from here on the Fox Footy Podcast this Tuesday morning. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth. It's cap day in the Fox Footy Podcast bunker. Firstly, let's welcome physically the coldest journo in the AFL media after Monday night's failed stakeout here. We don't have to go into the specifics of that, Tom.
No, we don't.
But Tom Morris, you were quite chilly last night.
I was out waiting for a story on assignment, as they call it. And it didn't quite work out, but that is journalism for you, and we live to fight another day. And I hope you enjoyed on the couch last night.
Oh, Ben, we did enjoy it on the couch. Certainly myself and Max Lawton, part-time F1 specialist, also enjoyed it as well. Hello, Maxie.
Can't believe the red... No, stop that. I was going to say, you didn't get quite a frosty reception when you came in. Jared giving you a huge pump up at the start of your
segment on Jared pumps me up, and I feel a bit awkward sometimes because I haven't really proved too much. I'm just looking to do the best job I can for the company, Ben.
Yes, very humble of you, Thomas, as
and
always.
And your cap looks great. You did say it was cap day.
Yes, it is cap day.
Two of the three of us are wearing caps.
Well, my head's too big for caps.
Okay, well, play on.
You had a WrestleMania.
Yes, that was my television debut, actually, before my real debut on the Weekend Lowdown.
You have to speak about that. Maxie's debut on the Lowdown, Thursday nights at 6:30 on Fox Footy.
Is it debut or debut?
What I will say about Max's TV credentials,
please,
they are growing by the minute. You know how many people mentioned it to me? That is the key part of the Lowdown show. Max Facts has now become like
Max Explaining.
Sorry, Max Explaining.
Max Facts is a future segment.
It's become a thing. Tune into the Lowdown.
Yeah. It helps when you have a name that can make a catchy title really easily.
Thank you to Nicky Lawton.
Yes.
Yes, good work.
And Anthony.
Law listeners, they are. Let's get into the Match Committee big call here on the Fox Footy Podcast. So, Tom, any player that should be dropped / picked?
See, there's some
the
big names to pick from here, Tom. I wonder who you'll go for.
Kerr, not Daniel, not Sam. No, Patrick Kerr for Carlton.
Patrick Kerr.
So these are my thoughts, right? So yes. Carlton are struggling. They're going to be Norton 10. So you may as well play as many...
Just Norton 10?
There might be more than that.
No, I think they'll beat Essendon in round 8, to be honest.
I actually don't think they will. I think they're horrible. And any team would... Most teams would be pretty ordinary if they're missing all their top five of the best and fairest from the year before.
True.
So Carlton this weekend play Adelaide. They're not going to win. They're playing in Adelaide. Give Patrick Kerr a game. He kicked 3 goals on the weekend. But Patrick Kerr is best known, and if you YouTube this, ahead and type this into YouTube. Patrick Kerr hits ball onto the freeway for St. Kevin's College. He was batting at St. Kevin's.
Cricket.
Yeah. Batting. I think he's a left-handed batsman facing a bowler called Will Hanlon. And he baseball batted this ball onto the freeway towards Scotch. Now, anyone that's been at St. Kevin's College knows how big this hit is. Not just high up, but also far. This was going into the stratosphere. So, yes, he can play footy, but wow, can he play cricket? And they must give him a game this week.
Sort of Chris Lynn, Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr.
Yes. Well, it's a night game. It's a sort of day-night test sort of option for them.
I want to just point out, I know it's irrational to talk about how far he can hit a ball in regards to his AFL
credentials. True. It's very irrational.
But I just think at Carlton, they may as well play as many young players as they can. He kicked 3 goals on the weekend. Give him a go.
Let him coach. Why not?
Lots to discuss about the Blues. We'll get into them a bit later. But your big call, Maxie?
Zach Smith. I mean, as a Geelong fan, I've sort of been on this for a little while anyway, given Reece Stanley's form, but the boys on the couch really did a really good job of explaining why, as Rusey said, they need a big banger ruckman. sort of player who can just dominate the taps, dominate the clearances. The Cats are really struggling in the clearances. I think -9
worst
per game.
Mm.
Easily worse behind St Kilda.
Yeah, what I find most amazing about Geelong's clearances is that they actually leak as much as they get.
They're first in the AFL for scoring from and scoring allowed from clearances.
So either way, it's
disastrous or incredible, no matter what happens at a Geelong clearance. It's action-packed.
It's a bit like their football, though, overall, isn't it? Dangerfield and Selwood and Ablett make it look great.
Yeah.
But then when they don't have it, it looks like a bottom four team.
You wrote about this last night, off what the guys talked about with the Sydney clearance tactic and how they were able to create space, specifically Josh Kennedy, who played a colossal final quarter, and able to expose Geelong's lack of defensive running.
Yeah, Kennedy had more centre clearances for the game than Geelong did. total.
Is that right?
It was incredible. Yes. He had three center clearances in the final quarter with essentially the exact same setup. He had your two one-on-ones on either side of the center circle, and then Kennedy sort of in the bottom left, if you're looking from the main camera shot. And then every time, Callum Sinclair getting it to the bottom right, Kennedy running into space, gets the clearance, ends up in a bunch of goals, kicks seven goals to one.
Sinclair getting it to five o'clock on the clock dial.
Yes, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yes, and it was. I looked at it and thought, that's the game. That's essentially in the last quarter, that's where the game was. It was a fascinating contest up until then, but that was pure brilliance, I think, from the Swans midfield coach. I think that a lot of credit has to go to that.
Did you hit the Swans, Max?
No, I didn't. I wonder if anyone had any sort of reason why they should have, though.
Well, there's a certain thing called the rebound effect, Max. Yes. Not sure if you've heard of it.
You got some good feedback about
this,
Thomas.
I thought it was called the Tom Morris theory, TM.
The thing is, we're not going to get too bogged down with this theorem, but we're talking about it every week on the podcast, and it's growing legs. I'm getting tweets about it, and it's developing every week. So what we've realised this week, Sydney Geelong. Sydney got done by Adelaide the week before, which trumped the fact that Geelong actually played okay against, or very well against Port and beat them.
Yep.
So a team on the rebound that gets done the week before will often win the next week against a team that just wins.
And I think that makes sense in a competition that we think is so even right now. We're seeing it week to week. Teams are able to lift and respond.
It's emotionally based, isn't it? And Alistair Clarkson said it after the game in Launceston in front of a very, very dwindling press conference of Launceston journalists.
Yes.
And you.
And me and Peter Ryan from The Age.
On your Pete.
He said, the most vulnerable teams at the moment are the teams that win the week before.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how you put your theorem into place come the round seven preview tips and cups a little bit later on the podcast, Tom. So look out for that. But you mentioned the unpredictability of the competition, Maxi, which makes doing the power rankings for foxfooty.com.au quite tough.
So Richmond at the top, they've been unanimous for three straight weeks now. I think that's pretty fair. Everyone seems to agree they're the best team in the comp. Dermot Brereton making a comment to that effect over the weekend. And then it's sort of a race for who's the actual next contender. We talked about Sydney 2 weeks ago and they lose to Adelaide. Now they're sort of back up in sort of contention. Adelaide's up there. West Coast was third in the power rankings.
Third is amazing, isn't it?
People backing the Eagles thinking, well, they're 5-1, that their win record certainly suggests they're playing okay. I think you have to look at their resume, who they've beaten.
Who they've played, yeah.
Best win is either over Fremantle in the Derby, which was an excellent game, let's keep in mind. I think a part of it is just that West Coast is playing a attractive brand of football and people want to see that. But their other good win was against an injury-ravaged Geelong with one rotation in the last quarter.
They've got A-graders, though. Any team with half a dozen or so absolute A-graders is going to win more games than they lose, I feel. And Nat Nui back into that team makes a massive difference. That's been said all year. Even with Richmond last year, a lot of people talk about they won the flag because their 16th, 17th, 18th players were really good. I actually think they won the flag because they got five absolute superstars and then everyone else just played their role. And West Coast isn't too dissimilar to that.
GWS 5th. I don't know how to evaluate them.
Grant Thomas does.
Yeah, tell us about what Grant Thomas had to say on a rival podcast.
I can't quite find the quotes, but he referred to them as front-running. He referred to them as weak, as pathetic. He questioned the coaching. Look, Grant Thomas, he's a smart football mind. He coached St Kilda to a couple of prelims, but I think a lot of people feel the same about the Giants. You got the quotes there, Ben?
They are a bunch of big heads at the moment who have got an inflated opinion of themselves, and I don't think they are very well coached. The culture is managed to such a level that it doesn't allow them to play as professionals with humility. They are more interested in how they look rather than how they play.
Thanks to the Sam, Mike and Tomo podcast.
Yes.
I will say, Sam Newman and Mike Sheen, the other two people, I don't completely agree with that, but I also don't completely disagree. They are, at present, underperforming as to how they should be with their list.
They are skating through a very easy fixture, but not looking anywhere near close to a top four team against Brisbane, and then drawing against St Kilda, who we're going to speak about later, have just been rubbish.
So who are some of the other surprises to come out of the power rankings?
Collingwood's still in the top eight. I think a lot of people gained more respect for Collingwood than the way
they
lost.
43 points, didn't they?
Well, yes, but Richmond is the best fourth quarter team in the comp.
They are.
And the best team, which sort of ties in hand in hand. And the game was much closer than that scoreline.
It was a good game.
It was a very good game. That and the Derby were easily the two best games of the round. And the underlying stats sort of go against this a little bit. They weren't great. Not a lot of inside 50s for Collingwood, and they've been really good at converting those this season.
Opposite to last year.
Yes, so it's about whether they can continue to get that flow of them going, and against Richmond they found it quite tough. But I rate Collingwood. I think they're probably a finals chance right now.
Well, I was watching the first half of that game before I clicked over and watched Fremantle versus West Coast on the other Fox Sports channel.
Yes, 503.
One of the many.
Yes, it was on 503.
Yes. No, it was on 504.
504. Anyway, regardless of what channel it was on, I was watching it, and watching Collingwood Richmond the first half, I think this is a top four type game. Mm. This looks like two top four teams
finals
going.
Finals like it was
so
described. Yeah.
I was watching on Friday night and we had the Dogs Carlton game, and obviously that was not the most attractive of games. And
it was shocking.
So we had about 20 minutes of analysis of that maybe, and then we moved on to the rest of the weekend. Understandable from the post-game producers.
Well played.
And Jonathan Brown said, is this a grand final preview? Collingwood v Richmond.
Yeah. Did he really?
And the other guys sort of chuckled and laughed, like, oh, come on, it's a bit... But is that so ridiculous?
We mentioned on the podcast 3 weeks ago, did we not, that given the pattern of 2 years ago with the Dogs and last year with the Tigers, any team that is fit can perform at the right time and reach the last day in September. Mm. Collingwood are not completely out of this.
No.
At all.
I think they're a big finals chance. To say at round six, though, that they're potentially competing for the grand final.
But who else?
I think you've got to look at some of those seasoned teams.
You do, Sydney and Geelong.
Will probably know what to do come the end of the home and away season.
But that flies in the face of the last 2 years, doesn't it?
This is true.
So
for the premiers, yes, but like Sydney was there and Adelaide, right. they were there.
Geelong, two straight prelims. People yes. are underrating them. And you look at how many injuries they had out. I think a lot of people talked about Sydney's injuries because of Buddy and Hanbury going out of the side, but probably 8 or 9 first choice players were not playing for Geelong on the weekend.
Yeah, not everyone looked at just Sydney's injuries. What I will
nine out of nine.
What I will say about Collingwood is I don't think they're going to make the grand final, but I think they'll play finals.
Yeah, I think they will too.
And then, honestly, now more than ever before in the history of the game, if you play finals, everyone is in with a chance. Mm. If you finish 8th, and you might have the same amount of wins as a 6th place team, if you are fully fit in 8th, then you are still a chance to make a grand final. No longer is it completely impossible to win 4 on the trot and win the flag. We saw that 2 years ago.
Where was Essendon on your power rankings?
Down in 13th, I think they're done. I don't think Essendon can play finals. I think Essendon's too inconsistent. I think they're too based on emotion. They're too up and down. And coaching, there are some questions about... We had some questions about where they were playing certain players. Your Jake Stringers and trying to put him in the midfield. That clearly didn't work. Putting him forward has been a little bit better. But even still, it just seems like things are passing by the Bombers in terms of the way the AFL works.
So just on... You mentioned their 450... and their targets and positioning just then. So on the couch last night, they showed Essendon's top inside 50 targets when kicking inside 50. Cale Hooker is the number one target with 31 for the season, even though he's played 48% of the season as a defender.
That's bizarre.
Which is. And I suppose, and we will get into the sort of the state of the game and the discussion around that very soon. But a lot of the game these days is about pressure and playing the game in your forward half. That's what the best teams do. And at the moment, the Bombers are ranked 15th for time in forward half and creating forward half intercepts. And they're ranked 18th for creating forward half stoppages.
When I think of the Bombers, I think of them running from half back and having some really exciting play. Yeah. But it just is not the sustainable method to win in the AFL in 2018.
Well, you talk about spirit. Or you talk about the lack of drive, the lack of emotion in their game sometimes. Mm. I think that is built on the fact that their system is no good. And as a result, their system isn't allowing them to play with any sort of
vigour
forward of centre that they need to do to win games. Now, you can say, oh, anyone can try. Yes, they can try. But whether it's Worsfold or his army of assistant coaches, which isn't a great group of assistant coaches either, to be honest.
A couple of people have said that to me.
Mark Neal and Mark... I mean, I'm sure they're all knowledgeable people, but who in that group is the next AFL coach? I think most AFL clubs will try to have an assistant coach who's next in line to be an AFL coach. I think most clubs do. Essendon just don't at this stage.
They're a more senior group.
And I wonder whether John Worsfold tactically isn't as good a coach as he was 10 years ago.
That's fascinating you mentioned that. And there's been a lot of talk about John Worsfold's contract over the past couple of weeks. Robert Walls was very vocal on AFL Tonight on Monday night. Robbo on AFL 360 Extra on last week as well, bemoaning the fact that Essendon might have gone too quickly and re-signing him.
Yeah, they lost a JLT game. Was it the first JLT game they got smashed in Essendon? Might have been the second
against
one.
Against Richmond?
Yeah, they got belted against Richmond. Yeah. Yeah. And Worsfold was due to re-sign shortly after that, but I can tell you people at the club held back. The board held back just a touch more, just to wait and see how round one went. They beat Adelaide and then the contract came. Yeah. And I think the contract was always going to come, but it was certainly delayed by that loss to Richmond. So not all is well down there at the hangar.
But even though the board has delayed that by game after, has delayed that decision by one JLT game, they've delayed it. And then after round one, after a decent win, they've then moved on that. That's just... that's too just, reactive.
They were just looking for a rubber stamp. They had made up their mind clearly in that sort of scenario. Then.
Yeah. Jake Nile uses the Goddard scale. How bad a performance was on the Goddard scale? This scale is dependent on how many times Goddard loses at his teammates. How bad was the performance against Melbourne on a Goddard scale, Max?
Well, it wasn't as bad as Anzac Day because we didn't have a week of discussion about it, I suppose. Yeah, yeah. But clearly not great. And Melbourne, I think, is just a more talented team than Essendon. People talk a lot about Essendon. They're so talented, but they're not playing up to that. Are they?
Yeah. I think there's talent on that list.
There is.
But I think they're struggling in the midfield. They don't have a game breaker in the midfield.
They don't.
Are they not West Coast? Are they not good pillars at either end? Are they not a rich man's Gold Coast?
A very rich man's
Gold Coast.
What I will say is a four-day break compared to a five-day break is massive.
Yeah.
So the shorter the break, the harder it is. So it's like a one-day break compared to a two-day break is huge.
Yep.
2 days to 3 days, massive. 9 days to 10-day break would hardly be anything. So the more condensed the breaks are between the two teams, the harder it is. And clearly, Essendon, 4 days, they faded. Melbourne had 5 days, even 4.5 days, 5 days. That extra night of sleep can make a big difference.
We now move on to the state of the game, Maxie, which dominated the Monday night shows.
Yeah.
And it can be for some quite a litigious and topic that can bring the tone of, I think, of conversation down. But it is important because numerically, scoring is at an all-time low. Disposal efficiency is at an all-time low. And it's got a lot of greats of the game. You know, Malcolm Blight and Lee Matthews, quite prominent in the media today. On the couch, AFL 360 last night, coaches calling, you know, Chris Scott calling for 16 players on the field and six on the interchange bench. So AFLW rules, essentially, is this, to borrow an AFL 360 term, real or overreaction?
Well, I've got a pen so I can play with Jared. And I can get the name of the segment wrong.
Wow, whacked a Robbo.
Which he did last week. I think that's only fair. 84.3 points per game at the moment. Lowest through round six since 1968.
Okay, but why?
So, look, Chris Scott had a really good point on AFL 360. What are we protecting? Yeah. Like, we want to be traditionalist and we want to say, oh, no, but you don't want to get in there and infringe on the basics of footy and stuff. But the game as it is now is ugly.
You think this is an overreaction, don't you?
Oh, I think it's a massive overreaction. I don't love every game I watch. In fact, I probably didn't enjoy five or six of the nine games on the weekend. But inside 50s are the highest they've been since 2000.
Yes. Can I counter that by saying that percentage of goals once inside 50 is the lowest of all time.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So I think this is a talent issue because you put two good teams against each other. Collingwood, Richmond, great, terrific game. Even West Coast, Fremantle, very good game. But you put Carlton Bulldogs, probably 10 or 15 blokes on that field wouldn't have got a game at a club before it turned into 18 clubs instead of 16.
But
it's just not as good.
But we've had 18 clubs for 6-7 years now. Why would that only be eventuating now?
No, it's eventuated throughout this time. I've thought this for the last 6 or 7 years.
But why is it only happening now that we're getting to this level? Is it not a correlation between the way that we're coaching these teams as well? We saw Richmond winning a flag off of pressure. You say it's having so many inside 50s because everyone's pressing up and playing that inside forward half game. You have to be successful in this game.
It's a mixture.
And if you're a bad team, you can apply some pressure and you can make turnovers, but when it happens to you, you are not able to deal with it. You are not able to deal with things efficiently.
So you can be as talented as you want, and I don't know if there has been a talent drop-off. I think that needs...
No, it's just dispersed.
Yeah, I agree with that to a certain extent, but no matter what, how talented you are, the pressure that is being applied by AFL teams at the moment, no matter how talented you are, is so hard to deal with.
So someone on the couch last night, I think it might have been Jonathan Brown, said that skill levels are the worst he's ever seen.
Yep.
That's just wrong. The skill levels cannot possibly be at the worst we've ever seen.
Maybe statistically it's right, but the talent of the player...
Statistically it may be right in terms of disposal efficiency and stuff, but that has... You can't completely just correlate those two things. You can't say skill level equals disposal efficiency.
No, you can't.
Because that is impacted by coaching and game style and all of that stuff. Skill level is better because these players spend more time training and practicing. They're better athletes. They're better at a lot of things. It just so happens that the way the game has been played now is limiting their ability to show some of those abilities.
Can we break it down? The game is all about how you put on pressure and how you deal with pressure.
Yep.
And players that aren't very good don't deal with pressure well.
Yeah.
But they can still put on pressure. But players that are good, like Richmond, deal with pressure superbly, and therefore it makes for a better spectacle. Mm. Now, It is played in a phone box, and I'm not against zones or changing interchange or making it 16 aside. Do whatever you want to do, but no matter what happens, the game from now on will always be high pressure, and you'll have less time than ever to get rid of the ball. That is a reality of what's happened.
Yes.
Watching the best AFL, in my opinion, is still better than watching any other sport in the world at its best.
Yep.
The problem is the bottom level AFL, a la Bulldogs versus Carlton or even St Kilda Hawthorn, is absolutely ordinary. But we have more people watching the game now, therefore more people voicing their concerns about that. I'm very comfortable with where it's at. 6 weeks ago, we've got everyone saying, leave the game alone, and now we've got mountains of former players coming out saying, must change this, must change that.
Because things have changed. Because people saw Richmond and everyone's doing it more and more. Everyone's doing more and more pressure. And the element of traditionalism I don't mind is people saying, we want the game to be about who is the best at things like high marks, things like moving the ball really well. We don't want the game to be about who is the best at pressure. Do we want to reward that with premierships?
Well, I don't mind rewarding it, because then it's not just about who's the best at pressure, it's about who's the best at dealing with pressure.
So if there was a short-term tweak that the AFL wanted to implement, probably it can't be this year now, but it may be at the start of next year. Is there a tweak maybe that would go a long way to ensuring that the relationship between the AFL and its key stakeholder, the fans, remains healthy because the game is aesthetically pleasing?
What would you do, Max?
I think zones is easier than 16-6, and they're the two I like. 16-6 is the most radical one, of course, but I think it makes a lot of sense, because in AFLW it has a problem because the players just aren't talented enough to kick as far as you need to make up for that when there's all that extra space.
Yeah.
So
they're playing on the same size grounds as the men they're playing on as well.
It just doesn't work. Whereas at AFL level, I would expect there would be unforeseen circumstances that could work. Zones, even if it's just a little bit, even if it's a trial, even if it's a couple of players, just get a few more players out of that congested area. We saw that shot from Adelaide Gold Coast.
Yes.
Was it 25?
25 within about a 20-metre radius.
That's just gross. You know?
Yeah,
that
gross.
You can fix that.
I'll tell you what I would do. And it would be a multi-million dollars. I'd shorten the season to make it everyone plays each other once and then one rivalry round, call whatever you want. And I would get rid of almost every marquee midweek Thursday night Monday game except for Anzac Day. So I actually wouldn't be playing footy on Easter Monday. I wouldn't be playing on Good Friday. I'd make it a Saturday Sunday competition. Everyone has a 6 or 7 day break, and Anzac Day is the only anomaly out of that.
That is quite radical.
You're not going to be running the AFL any time because you'll be losing them a bunch of money.
Yeah, no, but I know it's the financial decision, but I'm just sick of all this stuff that's happening around the game. The game is the most important. Footy was a Saturday 2 p.m. thing, and it doesn't need to be a Saturday 2 p.m. thing anymore. You can have Friday night, Saturday and Sunday. But what's happening now is teams are playing Mondays and Thursdays and Fridays into Saturdays, and what that means is they're having 4 to 5 to 6 day breaks, which is significantly impacting how the game looks because the players are so fatigued before the game even starts.
Okay, and we are expecting more of them. They're doing a lot more running, a lot more training during the week.
But you know what? It's not going to happen, but that is the, if I'm going to make a change, that's what it is. Shorten the season, make it easier.
The one I don't like, restricting interchanges. So explain to me this theory. We're going to make them more tired, and that therefore the game will be better.
Yeah.
What?
Well, the thinking is that it's going to be more open, and therefore it's going to be better.
Yeah, but what? It's going to be more open because a player is too tired to run at another player.
Yeah.
I don't. But well, then, if they're exhausted, that ties into your theory about everyone being too tired to play well.
I think they're going to struggle. I think they're. So it's at 90 at the moment.
Yeah, it's 90.
So I think they're going to straight. Whoever wants to push for that might struggle to get it past the Players Association, I think.
Kevin Sheedy said recently on radio that anyone that wants interchanges over 50 should be sacked.
All right, bye.
Yeah, that's it.
And mic drop.
I'm not sold on interchanges, what they should be, because I just don't know. I don't know the scientific research behind it.
It's a fascinating conversation.
I'm happy with the game, Ben.
I know you are, Tom. And you were so positive on social media yesterday. I just uplifted everyone's spirits.
It's just a knee-jerk reaction to a couple of bad games of footy. The best footy is still bloody awesome.
Hopefully it does turn around pretty soon, and we do find a nice balance, no doubt about that. So the Bombers are struggling at the moment, but another team that is really struggling as well is St Kilda, and one man who's got his finger on the pulse all things St Kilda is a member of so many Hall of Fames, the Australian Football Hall of Fame, the Western Bulldogs Hall of Fame, and the Little Athletics Volunteer Hall of Fame as well. So it's now time to welcome in one of our favourites here at Fox Footy, Brad Johnson. Hello, Jono.
Hey, boys, how you going?
We're well.
I love
how
you bring that up every single time
yes.
we chat.
Yes.
You bring up the fact that you've got to mention, though, now when you introduced me, that it was a grass track at Werribee as well.
Oh,
that was what it was. It wasn't this, you know, pure stuff that we see today where players can bounce around. Mm. We had the long spikes on the grass track, so it was tough work.
I always thought you were a bit of a sort of a sandpit scraper, a giant. That's sort of how I thought you were as a little athletics volunteer.
But come on, let's get to it, Ben.
Nonetheless, we've got you on to talk about the Saints, and you've kept a close eye on the Saints, particularly over the past couple of weeks. I know you were watching the game ahead of the Saturday stretch on Saturday night. What do you think are some of the bigger issues or deeper issues with the Saints? And maybe even before that, did you think the Saints, or do you think the Saints have underperformed six rounds into the season so far?
Oh, yeah, I think that's clear, isn't it? The fact that they haven't achieved what we all thought, and probably internally where they thought they'd be at it in the early part of the season. They're down in a number of areas, and that's, I think, in relation then to what they're putting on the scoreboard, which isn't too much at the moment. Yes, they've missed some easy shots along the way in the first few rounds, which has sort of broken their spirit a little bit out on the ground, where they've worked so hard to get into a position and not being able to convert. But I think it's more sort of deeper than that in terms of what we're seeing with St Kilda. And I think on the other night when they played Hawthorn, I think the biggest aspect is they're tough around the footy and they'll compete for you, but the outside and their outside run, apart from Jack Stephen, I think is a real problem for them. And I think Isaac Smith once again highlighted that, which he does to many opposition teams, that if you've got good outside run, you can actually complement what you've got inside. And he does that at Hawthorn, and St Kilda don't really have that because they're expecting Jack to win it inside. And then to win it outside, they need to complement that somehow.
John, I need you to do some ranking for me, please. In 1, 2, 3, what is the biggest problem at the moment? Is it list management, coaching, or players at St Kilda?
Wow. Good work, Tommy. Thanks for the heads up on that one. List management, coaching, and I've got to rank them for you. Okay.
What's the biggest problem out of those three?
I think the biggest problems of those three would be probably the players into the coaching into
yep.
the list.
Explain that.
Yeah. So I think the players are I think the coaching aspect of it, and they've got their structures in play where they can actually get the ball into some decent areas. I think the players are letting down with execution at the moment, and that's just the reality of, you know, when a side's not going well, generally the plan's in place, but if you haven't got the players to implement the plan, then that becomes, you know, a little bit of an issue. I also think that, and I know we mentioned it on Stretch the other night, and I was watching, Couch last night, and the discussion started to go around the absence of Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagne. Now, yes, they've got some young players, St Kilda, but those two guys created work rate. One from Lee Montagne off the back half of the ground, and I don't think Savage is playing okay at times, but his skill level has let him down, when generally he's a pretty good kick, where Montagne would rarely sort of turn it over from 25 to 30 metre kicks coming out of the back half. And then you've got Riewoldt, who was the presenter, and he would present on a regular basis, be in your vision, and create that outlet for you for the Saints on the wing, and then going forward when they needed to from that position. So the loss of those two guys, I think, is more significant than what they thought. I thought they would have played Josh Battle a little bit more in the early rounds to complement that loss, because Josh is, in some ways, a worker like Nick Riewoldt was. He will push the logos, he'll help defensively, then he has got the ability to get back. You know, he's a great endurance player. So that's one player I thought of may have seen a little bit more of in the early rounds. He has been an emergency a couple of times. So I think those two guys, it's significant in terms of what we're seeing in the loss of those two guys with the way St Kilda want to play.
So, Jono, if you were in the coach's box this weekend, what's the one thing you would do to try and halt all of these issues that they're having? Is it a selection thing? Is it a coaching strategy change? What would you do?
Oh, look, I think they played their best footy 2 weeks ago against GWS when they set six forwards forward of the ball.
Yeah.
And you know, the word around at the time was there was, you know, discussions from players with the coaches about doing that. I'm not sure how that panned out last week, but the GWS was a significant shift from the playing group in terms of, and the coaches in terms of structure forward of the ball. So when they look up and they break away, or they get that quick kick out of stoppage, they're kicking to one-on-ones, not 2v1s where it's a quick turnover and goes back over over their head. So I think that's the aspect of St Kilda. If they can create even numbers forward of the ball, I think they're going to be in better shape than trying to play the loose of Carlisle back behind or things like that. They may be able to manufacture that if the opposition send a half forward up behind the stoppage, and then they can just drop Carlisle off. Someone goes to his man, he drops off and becomes a spare, but you've still got even numbers forward of the ball, which I think will help Membry, it'll help McCartan, it'll help the smalls that are trying to get to their feet instead of getting right up the ground, which we see so often, and then pushing back and they're absolutely fatigued, and that's probably one of the reasons why they're missing their shots, because of the work they're having to do to get to these positions.
Jono, you said, or you spoke to Alan Richardson pre-season, and you said that his confidence and belief in the Saints rising up the ladder was infectious. But also in your pre-season take for foxfooty.com.au, you said your main concern with St Kilda is their defensive back six good enough to handle the severe pressure that will come their way from the opposition with the way the game is played today. Have you noticed some concerns in that area as well?
I think so. I think that's sort of playing out, Benny, and I don't know whether you guys agree with that. First point with Richo, yes, it was infectious. You know, he was, it's pre-season, he was up and about, he was obviously, you know, confident about the way they would go as a side, and the way that he delivered that message when I chatted to him was as good as I've heard Richo talk throughout his time as a coach. I thought it was sensational. So he sounded like he had built that belief within his team as well, and what they would be able to produce on match day. And then to the second point in terms of their back six, I just think that, you know, even, you know, Brown, sort of a straight line sort of player. Carlisle, he can fluctuate in and out of games. He can play some ripping games. He can make some errors that can really cost your team. And then, you know, Geary's sort of obviously their captain, but he can be exposed, I think, you know, one-on-one. Savage can be as well. And that was my point. If the opposition had just got weighted numbers coming through their back six, which we've seen, the floodgates will open at some point. And we talk about their conversion, but they've also leaked a number of scores to the opposition because they just can't handle what's coming their way.
Jono, last one from me. Put your list manager's hat on. Which big fish do you target if you are a St Kilda list manager this off-season?
Oh, have you got some names for
yes,
me there?
I'll give you some. Lynch, McGovern, Sloan, Gaff are the main ones. Which one do you...
Lynch, McGovern, Sloan and Gaff.
Yes.
Take all four.
All right.
Which one would you take and how much would you pay?
Wow. Well, I think the first couple you'd pay anything for them in Lynch and McGovern. But I think Carlisle can sort of do that McGovern role. I'm not sure whether they need McGovern. They'll probably back him in. They've got enough forward, so therefore you go to Sloan or Gaff, I think.
Yep.
And I know Lynch is probably better than what they've got up front. But if Bruce comes back, then he can sort of help with that area. Sloan is a star. You look at him. I'm sort of now going towards Gaff for some outside run because you know that, you know, Ross and these guys are going to get their hands dirty. Dunstan, they love fighting the fight in the contest. So they need some release play that might actually help Jack Stevens' game, and he might be able to get a little bit more from him in terms of outside run rather than having to do both if he got some help in there. So Gaff might be the one that you'd look at in terms of that.
And a slightly cheaper option potentially could be someone like a Luke Dalhouse or a Libba or a Wallace, maybe, all from the Bulldogs, all out of contract.
Good on you, Tommy. That's the way, mate.
Oh, he's one.
There's 17 other teams out there, Tommy.
Yeah, no.
Just mentioned the Bulldogs. But no, that's fair too, what you're saying, in terms of, you know, those guys that are out of contract and will be you know, obviously looking to, you'd hope, stay with the Dogs, but the nature of the competition, as we know, boys, is that, you know, guys will have a look at all different scenarios that'll be put through their management. And those guys are no different to the other four you mentioned. They'll be looking for, you know, big deals that will secure their future.
Jono, you've been excellent with your time here in the Fox Footy Podcast. Looking forward to hearing the dulcet tones down in Mars Stadium, or up at Mars Stadium in Ballarat, for the Suns and the Dogs this weekend, and then on the Saturday stretch on Saturday night. Future award-winning show, that one. Jono, thanks for your time.
Well done, Jono.
Good work, boys. Enjoy.
Thank you very much to the smiling assassin himself, Brad Johnson. Always very good with his time here on the Fox Footy Podcast. So we mentioned his weekend upcoming. He'll be at the Western Bulldogs Gold Coast Suns game up in Ballarat. So we'll go through all the games tips and cups round seven. Always a very favourite time of the year for our loyal Fox Footy podcast listeners. Geelong and GWS, GMHBA Stadium, Max, on Friday night for the Steve Johnson Cup, Dawson Simpson best on grand medal. We mentioned Grant Thomas's comments about GWS off the top. Will the Giants show that they're not just a bunch of guys that are up themselves, Tom, this
big
Friday
heads.
Night?
Using my theory, Geelong wins this game.
Right, so you're officially using the theory.
I like the theory for this game a lot.
The theory works well. GWS played pretty ordinarily against the Brisbane Lions. Geelong would have a whack up the backside because they let a winnable game slip against Sydney, that game they should have won at home. Mm-hmm. This is the Cats all the way. If GWS win, Ben...
Oh, are we not saying Julian DeStoop style walk new to Warrnambool?
No, I wear a Geelong cap to next week's podcast. There
right,
you go.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. I also believe Geelong will be victorious in that game. I think it just makes sense. I think they're just more a talented side right now anyway. Even with their injuries, GWS has not impressed me at all. Stevie J Cup, by the way, could have been last week as well, given he was an assistant. He's an assistant at the Swans.
And he was very happy with the win as well.
So, well, I mean, I understand that they're his current employer, but... Come on, Steve.
Yes, it was a bit of a dagger in the heart for Geelong fans down in at Cadinia Park. Mm. The prestigious Jared Spindleshanks Grant Cup is up for...
the finest real estate agent in the southeast,
I believe. Yes, he is too. He's playing down sort of the Mornington Peninsula way, Jared Grant, for the Western Bulldogs and Gold Coast Suns game in Ballarat. Hopefully they get a good crowd down there.
Yeah, the Dogs win this one.
Yeah.
Why? I'm not interested in the Dogs at all this year.
Not interested? Just
no,
them.
They'll finish, what, between... 12th and 16th, and they won't...
Well, they won't finish 12th.
No, and they're not much, and just things haven't worked for them. I expect there to be a few changes at the end of the
year. Why is it... So, we're dismissing the Dogs. Why is it so simple that everyone's tipping the Dogs?
Because Tom Lynch is out until June with a knee injury.
All right, I'll tip the Dogs.
That doesn't help.
No, there you go.
Realistically, I think both of these teams are poor teams. I think they're bottom four contenders.
Yeah. I don't mind what the Suns are doing... building, but they just don't have the artillery, the cattle at the moment, do they?
Yeah,
the outgoings of some of those brilliant midfielders, I think, it's going to take them a while to build up. But David Swallow was outstanding in Adelaide on
Jared Lyon's still good.
Danny Jacobs Cup. Danny Jacobs was a favourite of mine back in the day, early sort of AFL fantasy days when he took pointless marks in the back line. Essendon taking on Hawthorn at the MCG.
Well, the theory suggests that Essendon should win this game, but there is
You're not going against your own theory here, Tom.
There's a caveat that Essendon, how long is their break that they have between games?
How long is this theory going to be in the end?
6 days. So it goes 4 days and 6 days, doesn't it? Hawthorn, I'm tipping Essendon in this game.
So three games in 10 days.
Yeah, I'm tipping Essendon in this game. I think Hawthorn were actually not great against St Kilda. St Kilda should have been ahead, and they got by because Isaac Smith and Luke Bruce were pretty clinical.
Using the theory.
There was about two, three players who decided that game, and they were all on Hawthorn's side.
Yeah.
I can't tip the Bombers. Having said that, the most Essendon thing to do would be to win this game and then lose to Carlton.
Absolutely. They've been under the pump. And they will play with spirit here. I'm tipping the Bombers, and I'm quite confident in this game.
I'm really looking forward to the game at Optus Stadium Saturday twilight for the Jared Schofield Cup, West Coast Eagles and Port Adelaide. Two teams that certainly at this stage look like... Well, top eight contenders.
Yeah, you just go for West Coast at home, don't you?
The extra time cup, we could call this one.
Oh, yes!
Of course, they haven't met since then. No, I think West Coast...
Excuse me, JLT. Didn't you remember
what happened again? Yeah.
So they had the JLT Community Series game and then the pre-game for the pre-season. Remember the extra time final? Cut to Leaderville Oval or wherever it was.
Yes.
Not quite the drama.
Cost Robbie Gray 1 week, that game, as well at the start of the year.
It's fair to say the JLT Community Cup, I'm more interested in cricket at that time of the year.
And also JLT.
Yeah, it is.
I do like West Coast in this game. Port still struggling, although they did look all right against North.
No, good against North. That was based on the theory, though. It wasn't them.
Correct.
Sydney and North Melbourne for the Brett Allison Cup. He was a high flyer back in his days. He took some really good
marks.
Also
a runner for North. Was he a runner for North?
Yes, he was a runner.
Premiership player for North.
Fluoro kind of operator, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sydney's coming off a win. North's coming off a loss.
I see where you're going.
It's in Sydney. I can't tip against the Swans here. I can't. No. The theory's not foolproof. It's just a guide.
Also, Sydney not good at the SCG? Are we going to say that at this point?
I'm not willing to say that yet.
They're not great at the SCG at the very least.
No one is great anywhere except for Richmond at the MCG.
This is true. And Fremantle at Optus. Oh, wait. They lost.
They lost.
82. It's, yeah. That sort of line reminds me of Pirates of the Caribbean. The code is more, not rules, more guidelines.
Yeah, you call me Johnny Depp if you want to, yes. Benny.
Adelaide and Carlton.
More of a Jeffrey Rush.
I couldn't split the Eccles-Massey Cup. Two great servants, Andrew Eccles and Chris Massey of Adelaide and Carlton.
Chris Massey, not Bob Massey, former right-arm medium paceman. Took 16 on debut against England.
No, Tom, not him.
Okay. Well, Adelaide wins this because Carlton aren't very good. It's a relatively simple one.
Gee, if you wanted to rest Taylor Walker, you couldn't have picked a better weekend.
It was a showdown the weekend after. A bit of a hamstring epidemic at the Adelaide Crows.
Hamstring awareness. What is that, Tom?
Oh, my God.
I love him saying after the match, I had a bit of hamstring awareness. So do I. I'd have them.
Yes. I'm aware that I have hamstrings as well.
Yes. And Aaron Phillips also, in AFLW, same terminology was used. Yes. So it's an Adelaide thing.
It's a Crows thing.
Yeah. Mm. It's either a very light strain or tightness.
Yes.
Okay. Awareness. Just ridiculous sort of chat. But doesn't mean the Crows won't win this. In fact, they'll win handsomely.
Yes.
Peter handsomely there for the Tom Morris... Great man. Richmond against Fremantle for the Troy Simmons Cup. Gee, I want Fremantle to do well here. They've shown some good signs in recent weeks, but Richmond at the MCG. Oh, it's almost exactly 12 months since the Dave Mundy kick after the side.
Yes, it was. Fremantle, I have officially turned on them. I did not I couldn't imagine them being good. Mm. Fremantle's all right.
Yeah.
Fremantle's going to be in contention for the eight in round 20.
I think they've, you know what? I think the Dockers have drafted really well.
Yes.
Last year, they picked mature age, ready to go guys. There are a couple of things from Adam Chera on Sunday.
And Brayshaw
was super special. Brayshaw with a couple
Banfield's
of big moments.
Good.
Banfield's found a role. I think that really suits him. But Chera, a couple of high-flying marks. He barely played any footy last year due to a shoulder injury. He did some really special things on the weekend.
Will Ross Lyon be in the coach's box for Freo here?
You reckon that there might be
No, I think he will be. But I just wonder how much the events of this week has played on his mind, the coach's mind, the club's mind.
I wonder if he'll be up to the media for his weekly press conference this week.
I'm very interested in all of that. Look, I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think the Tigers will win. But these sort of situations hanging over a club certainly don't help the training load ahead of a big game.
No doubt.
I think the Tigers win, though.
Yeah.
I think the Tigers win everything.
Again, this is not the one game that they will lose at the MCG this year.
So. Gee, St Kilda and Melbourne on Sunday for the Stephen Powell Cup, a former left footer
prestigious.
For both clubs.
Yes.
This is a huge game. The loser definitely can't afford to drop this one.
Yeah, and this is one of those ones that's coming on Melbourne's sort of run of games where they really should win these and build up this resume, build up this win-loss record that makes it hard for them to drop out of the eight. They've got a really good chance of going around 6-3, I think. They definitely should win this. St Kilda's completely on the slide. We've talked about that with Jono earlier in the pod. And the D's are good. And once they get it all together, I think they should be playing finals as well.
Theory suggests the Saints win.
The Tom Morris Cup, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. Coined by myself.
Yes.
I don't know who to tip in this game. I think it's a lot closer than what people say. I don't think Melbourne was very good in the first half at all against a pretty ordinary Essendon team.
Yeah. Is that Eddie had?
I think St Kilda actually fought quite hard against Hawthorn, just didn't have the polish. I'm reserving my tip here. I'm not sure.
You can't not tip.
Okay, I'm tipping St Kilda based on the theory.
So Melbourne fans need Google Maps to get to Etihad Stadium?
Come on, Ben. Dockland is quite Brisbane a high-rise place now.
And Collingwood.
Dedicated Jeep parking.
The Sunday twilight game.
Mal
the
Michael.
And the Pies. Yeah, Mal Michael, but also the Jared Malloy Cup. The uncle of Chloe Malloy, who won the AFLW Rising Star this year.
That was a question on the beep test a few weeks ago.
Was it really?
I believe, yes.
Wednesdays, 8:30. 9 o'clock, Fox Footy.
Fun show.
Tip?
Collingwood. Brisbane's bad. And Collingwood's good.
Yeah, I'm just wondering...
Theory?
Collingwood, I do.
Brisbane was in the game against GWS for a lot of it, which sort of said more about GWS.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just remember a clash, it would have been about 15 years ago, where the great Eddie McGuire was commentating and called the goal umpire from hell in a Collingwood-Brisbane game. Do you remember
course,
that?
Yeah,
the goal umpire from hell. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure if Eddie's in the box for this game. I doubt it is. Sunday evening. He doesn't do Sunday evening.
I don't think Eddie's going to Brisbane Sunday twilight.
Not a Sunday operator.
For a Collingwood game.
No. But I think the Magpies win this. But then again, I don't know. Because something about Brisbane at Brisbane makes me think, okay. I'm tipping Collingwood though. Don't worry, Max.
Hopefully no one doesn't get thrown out like last time.
Dwayne Russell calling the action along with David King, Alistair Lynch and Nick Del Santo on
Lynchy, just down the road from Lynchy.
Yes, just down the road for Lynchy. That's been a huge podcast.
Jeez, how long did that go for?
It's
40 minutes?
Yeah, we're pushing, I think a little bit more than 40 minutes.
If you're still listening now, you've got no life.
you've done really well to get through. But make sure you join us next week for the Fox Footy podcast as we dissect round 7, preview round 8. And always remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.